Hi, I'm Chris Carter, creator of The X-Files, and you're listening to The X-Cast.
Welcome back, everybody, to The X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm your host, Tony Black, and our journey into Season 10 continues, the mini-series, and we're talking still about Founder's Mutation for the last time. This time, we're going to be getting a little bit more into the plot and the mysterious experiments of the founder himself, Augustus Goldman, and his two children, Kyle and Molly, and exploring a little bit of that. I'm joined once again by Andrew Brooker.
Hello.
Hello. And one last run at Founder's Mutation, which overall, where do you think it might stand in the show? Certainly this miniseries. Do you think this will be the peak of it, or do you think there's better to come?
I think there's probably better to come. I hope there's better to come, not because this episode was bad at all. I thought it was a great episode, but like we've mentioned in the past, we've got Home Again coming, which I mean, we've talked about this a couple of times on the podcast and on Twitter and things. I'm desperately hoping that this is the sequel to Home that we were supposed to get 15, 20 years ago. So I've got my fingers crossed that it's going to go up, but you know, if it peaks here, there's nothing wrong with that. It's a very, very good episode.
I'm inclined to think like you. I think it will get better. You know, I think Founder's Mutation is a bit of a better episode than My Struggle in terms of what it's doing as a piece. I think I enjoyed My Struggle more because it was just 45 minutes of mythology and epicness.
Yeah.
So I think as a fan and someone who loves all the mythology stuff, I think I enjoyed that one more. But this one, I think, was a really solid, you know, piece of work by James Wong, and really gets in some quite nasty, horrible territory at times as well. You know, it's got many facets to it.
Yeah, it's got a bit of everything, hasn't it? It's got your nasty bits, you've got your blood and your gore, you've got your investigations, you've got, you know, a little bit of mythology. It's an all-round great episode, and it would be just as good, maybe not in 7, 8 and 9, but, you know, in the earlier seasons. You know, it would definitely be up there with the great episodes from those seasons as well. I think it's a fantastic X-Files episode.
It's as good as some of the stuff we've got in earlier episodes. Yeah, definitely. I think the other thing as well about this season is that already you can see where the money's going, can't you? You can see that it's, you know, they've spent a lot of money on it, and it looks good, and it just has a certain finesse, I think.
Oh, absolutely. They've been given, for their six episodes this time around, they've probably got the budget that they had for 22 or 24 yeah. back in the day, and because they've only got 6 hours to spread it across, you know, they can spend a bit more money and make it look a bit better, and, you know, kind of make everything cleaner, and you don't have to do, you know, the old school Chris Carter hiding in the shadows because you haven't got the money to make it look good.
Yeah, which on the one hand, you know, as we've talked about in previous episodes in like season one, is a good thing, you know, the whole idea of it being a bit lo-fi and grungy. But I think you couldn't do that anymore with this show. And in this day and age, even, really, it wouldn't work in the same way.
No, in this day and age, we've had gruesome shows. We've spoken about them in the past, like Hannibal, Fringe, all those kind of shows. They all have the money to make everything on the screen look disgusting. You know, you can't get away with just hiding stuff in the dark and quick flash cuts
yeah.
to make it, you know, to get quick hints at it. It wouldn't work in this day and age.
But I think what this episode especially has proved is that they can still unsettle you. You know, I mean, obviously James Wong and with Glenn Morgan are two of the best at this. You know, as you said earlier with Home, this isn't as good as Home, you know, very little is, but it's the whole thing of there are certain moments in this that are genuinely, if not scary, then really, oh, I remember going, oh, a couple of points. I mean, the first one is when Sanjay rams the knife into his head.
Oh, that's, yeah. I was eating my dinner when I watched that.
That's not a good idea.
No, I had to stop.
Oh, yeah.
It's the thing, and this is where TV has gone in the right direction for a couple of years now, and people have suddenly realised high def doesn't just mean what you see on the screen.
Mm.
High def sound can just make you want to vomit, and that noise as he stabs himself in the ear, man.
It was a proper
yeah,
wasn't it? Oh yeah, it was. You can hear the bone and the sinew and everything. it really gets under your skin
for a show like The X-Files to be able to do that still now. that's got to say something.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think the other moment as well that really got me was when Jackie Goldman cuts her stomach open.
Oh, yeah.
When she's pregnant. And he's just like, she just gets the thing and just goes, gets home. I was like, oh, my. When I watched it second time, I was like, oh. Because you really see it. You know, you see her literally rip open her stomach, her pregnant stomach.
Yeah, it's not a nice scene in the slightest.
No.
And it is up there with some of the grossest stuff I think I've ever watched.
Yeah, it really is gross. And it's up there with the X-Files being gross, but gross in a unsettling way, you know.
But it hasn't gone, and this is the big, one of the fears I had, because this is what happens with big budgets and special effects being what they are now. It hasn't gone, you know, the torture porn level of gore.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it would be so easy to do, you know. Your average person with a few hours can make effects like that with stuff on their home computer. So for them not to do that, I think is good. And for them to just, while it's gross and it grossed you out and it made me want to puke up the food I was trying to eat, it hasn't gone to a level where I just don't want to watch anymore. Mm. And it's a very fine line. And The X-Files has always managed to keep that or to balance itself along that line quite well.
Yeah, it treads it well, doesn't it? And that's the thing. It worked in the context of the episode in what it was trying to convey when it did these things. You know, it was with Sanjay. It was him trying to get this out of his head, this intense sound and this intense feeling.
Yep.
And then for Jackie, it was the fact that she was terrified of what was inside her, really, and that's what she was cutting out. You know, when she cuts out Kyle out of her belly.
Yeah, I think that's what makes it so unsettling as well. Because each time, especially in this episode, it's accompanied by some real, you know, honest desperation. And I think that's what makes it so uncertain. Like, this guy's desperate to get this noise out of his head. That's the only thing he can do is, you know, push a letter opener through his ear. Imagine being that desperate.
Yeah.
That's an unsettling feeling all on its own.
It is, yeah. You've got to be pretty desperate to do that. It's true. Actually, there's a in that scene where you see Jackie Goldman telling the story of what happened with Kyle.
Yeah.
And she's talking to Mulder and Scully, isn't she, and recounting what happened. Have you seen the outtake of what happens when they were filming that?
No.
You know, I don't know if you remember where when they're first talking to her, she sees a cat and she throws like an apple at the cat.
Oh, yeah.
Right. When she first did that, she threw the apple and it hit Gillian Anderson right in the breast.
No.
And you see, Gillian Anderson posted it on her Twitter or her Facebook, and you see her just go, poof. And then she goes, oh, my God, I'm sorry. And Gillian's like, I think they started laughing. Yeah, and it was, but she took it in good humour, I think, but that would have hurt.
Yeah.
She properly wallops that over the room.
I have to hunt that out, I think, when we're done recording. Yeah. That sounds amazing.
Look it up, everyone. It will be on Gillian Anderson's feed somewhere or on Twitter or whatever. But yeah, quite funny. That'll be on the DVD as well. You can bet your bottom dollar. But yeah, so the episode itself obviously takes a while to get to the character of Augustus Goldman and the twins, because it's Mulder and Scully investigating the whole, you know, the story and everything and getting into the point where they begin to understand what's going on. What did you make of the founder himself, Augustus Goldman? Was he a misguided good guy, or was he just a dodgy scientist?
I think he starts as the misguided good guy, doesn't he?
Mm.
I think, as generally it goes with these people, he starts with the best of intentions. And then, yeah, I think he very quickly becomes the mad scientist.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't think you can do what he was doing for that long and still try and think you're the good guy.
Because he was testing, like, on children, wasn't he? You know, whether...
Yeah.
Quite what he was doing is left a little bit uncertain. Because when he's questioned on whether or not alien DNA was involved, he's not shocked so much as defensive. So there's the sense that maybe, yes, he was involved with the government and he was... Which, you know, would explain why at the end, the FBI, DOD, BOD twat guy we talked about in the last episode...
Yeah.
He's there making sure that Mulder and Scully can't get in and tell Skinner to keep his people back, and they're very much locking down the building where it all goes down. So there's the suggestion that Goldman was very much one of theirs, and what he was doing was either trying to create hybrids or whatever. And obviously there's the whole thing when, in possibly the scene that creeped me out the most, which is when Jackie's talking about what happened and she thinks Molly is drowning, and she dives into the pool and Molly's just breathing. And she turns to her and just smiles underwater. I was like, oh, That really fucking creeped me out, that did.
Yeah, I remember saying very, very similar to the wife. Actually, there's a couple of scenes of in films of people doing similar that every time just make you kind of want to push back and get away from the TV.
Yeah, it's really unnerving. And the way he filmed that was really good, because you just see her go, what the fuck, when she's underwater.
It was beautifully done, because you kind of knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
At the same time, no matter which way it ended, whether she turned around and was still alive or she swam around and she was dead, it was going to be a horrible, horrible scene.
Yeah.
And it was just a different kind of horrible that made you want to run away.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
It's a creepy fucking smile as well.
It really is. It's just like, hello. Just like, oh yeah. My God. But obviously that, again, links back to the mythology as well. You know, the whole idea that the alien-human hybrids, you know, people like the guy in the Erlenmeyer flask and obviously Lucy Lawless in season 9.
Oh, yeah.
Who could breathe underwater, you know, and you see them being able to do that. And that goes back right to the first season of the show, which I liked as a callback to the fact that these kids potentially are some kind of new hybrid and they have, you know, it's again little links to the past and to the mythology that I think are important to have in there, because it means that there's still that respect for what came before.
Absolutely, but they don't make the silly mistake of like calling in, like you say, like Lucy Lawless was a great character on her own, but the whole super soldier thing was a bit daft.
It just went a bit Terminator, didn't it, in the end?
It did. It went very Terminator. It became, they kind of painted themselves into a corner with it when they couldn't be stopped, except for Mysterious Stone. No.
Well, it's because I was reading recently, and we will get to this on the X-Cast, I was reading the first volume of the Season 10 comic by Joe Harris, which is an alternate version of this now, of what's happening on the telly.
They're not canon anymore, are they?
No, they were, because Chris Carter had a hand in writing the first 5 issues, which were mythology. And there's, you know, some really cool ideas in there, and it's a really nice take. But one of the things in it is that magnetite, which is the stone, as you said, that ends up being able to kill the super soldiers, luckily, is all part of the story, and that it's being pumped in like a pipeline, and it's actually around a national park that is keeping super soldiers and aliens in. So that's quite a nice idea. But the thing is, you can do that in a comic much easier than trying to explain all that in a new, you know, in an episode. It would have been, what they do in that comic, if you ever read it, is a very, very different kind of mythology story than you could do on TV, I think.
Because you can get away with much, much more in a comic or graphic novel or whatever you want to call it. You can put more into that, and you can be forgiven for much more silliness, for want of a better word, because you're reading a comic book.
Exactly, and I fully intend for us to do the Season 10 comics at some point. I really do. I think, and the new IDW publishing comics that are going to come in April, which are based on this new miniseries.
Okay. I didn't realise that was happening.
Yeah, they're doing like they do with Star Trek after the movies, filling gaps. They're doing it for the X-Files now, which is wonderful, because we'll get a new comic every month or whatever, set in this new, after the Season 10, I believe, or in the middle of Season 10.
Nice.
Yeah, so we'll do all that. We will get to those things. So they're well worth a read, but it's just interesting how they do that differently. But yeah, going back to this, you've got Goldman, who's a bit of a mad sort. We don't really get to know him that well, but we get the idea. The more interesting thing is Kyle and Molly, which is his two children. Who Kyle obviously was, you know, cut out of his mother's womb and then disappeared and then was raised by her foster mother, and then Molly's been kept by her father in captivity with all the other children. Now they were weird as well, weren't they? All the different kids that we see in almost like the Silence of the Lambs.
the little glass cages, you know. Yeah.
Like there was the one that got me was the kid that has the facial dysmorphia, and it's almost like it's into the furniture.
Yep.
That was like, wow. Is that, I did think, I know that you do have some of these kids who have things like progeria and stuff, but are these real? They can't be. They must be inventions for the show.
I don't know. I mean, I hope they are, because poor fuckers would be suffering awfully, wouldn't they?
They would.
They look like they were just, oh no, I couldn't. You couldn't have things like that in real life. Surely you couldn't. No. I mean, things like elephantitis and things like that are as real as I want to get. Thank you very much. Yeah. And even then, some of those can be horrific.
No, exactly. You would hope so. You would hope that they're created for the show, but they leave a real impression, but obviously Kyle and Molly aren't that. There's a very much a, I said this earlier in a previous episode, but I think there's a real X-Men vibe with these two in terms of the fact they have what seems to be like this alien sort of telekinetic power.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's interesting that they're the only ones that do.
Yeah.
Because you've got all these other kids and, you know, melted faces and the kid they talk to with this really bad disfigurement and that. But none of them have superpowers except for those two.
But is it that they... Because the intimation is that they are failed experiments, potentially.
Yeah.
That Goldman may have actually got it right with Kyle and Molly, but he didn't know what he was creating, almost, and that he's created two alien-human hybrid creatures, you know, human beings or whatever, that can,
yeah,
you know, shatter glass with their minds and send Mulder flying and Scully flying across a room, which was like... You know, it was really, really cool to see.
But when you do that, so when you look at it that way, so obviously you go up the corridor and you've got the kids in various stages of whatever, and then you get to her, is absolutely like the glasses from Alien Resurrection.
Yeah, it's true, actually, yeah.
The seven failed experiments before you get to her.
Yeah, maybe that was intentional. Although I don't know if you'd really want a nod to Alien Resurrection. I'm not sure.
No, no one would want to nod to Alien Resurrection ever.
No, you quietly forget it exists.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, I think, really, really cool. And obviously, you know, Goldman meets his demise in a really fucking horrible way again, you know, with...
That was awful.
Yeah. Just being bled to death from... Well, we presume to death. We don't actually see him die, although it's pretty clear he must die.
Yeah.
Being blood, you know, basically having his eyes and his ears exploded with blood. That's, again, just a really sort of, ugh.
But this is kind of what I mean when you say you know how he died, but at least you didn't see it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
This would have been a very different TV show if you'd have seen it.
It would, like Scanners, if you see his head blow off or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just underscores the idea that these kids who seem to have just vanished, although, like you said, well, you were going to say earlier about Molly, I suspect we will see them again. If not in this run, then in another run, they may well do a sequel. If they don't feature in the actual mythology, which is every possibility they might, then I think we might get a sequel episode with those two. Because it's very much unfinished. And there's ripe for some exploration there of these two telekinetic alien kids roaming around out there. Spin-off, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
The X-Men Files. There you go.
Yeah. You want to copyright that before someone else does.
That's mine. That's mine. You heard it here first. Yeah, all in all, I think Founder's Mutation is a really solid episode. It blends mythology and Monster of the Week and even, like, you know, emotional stuff for the two leads really well. And it surprises you, I think, in how well it does all that and how much it does that. So I think it's a successful second episode.
Absolutely, without a doubt. It's... And I know, because you and I have spoken about a couple of the early episodes, and especially like the episodes 2 and 3 from season one. And this is what Conduit should have been.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
This is that episode. This is what Conduit tried to be. It tried to be an episode all on its own with a little bit of mythology added into it and failed miserably. This one was just, it was spectacular.
And character work, obviously, from Mulder.
Yeah. Plenty of character work for everybody in this one, you know. New characters we've had to introduce to us with the two X-Men. Mm. You know, literally, they're the twins from X-Men and the Avengers.
Yeah, they are, aren't they? Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, that's true.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think this is how that Conduit essentially was the second episode after the very long pilot that bled into Deep Throat. Mm. This is the episode that Conduit wanted to be. I think it was a spectacular 45 minutes.
I think you're right. I think that's a really good way of looking at it, definitely. Okay, we do have, just before we go, a little bit of feedback from, again, from Clarence Moy at CH Moy, who wrote me back, actually, in an email just discussing some other stuff, but he wrote me back about the comments he'd made in an earlier episode talking about My Struggle, in which he talked about how he wasn't that necessarily keen on the mythology, and he did quantify a little bit of this, and he did say, he said, I was rethinking my original statement. It's not mythology I dislike outright. It's more the episodes that are overtly conspiratorial and omit the series running commentary on what it's like to be human. After watching all 201 episodes recently, that's the thing the overall series left me with. It cleverly ties into aspects and commentary on humanity into all of its stories, monster or myth. I thought My Struggle largely lacked that aside from Mulder and Scully's great reconnection. That's an interesting way to look at it, really, isn't it? About how he takes from it much more about the ideas of humanity as opposed to the just the conspiracy angle.
Yeah, I'd say that's definitely a good way of looking at it in the original seasons, as they'll from here on be known. But yeah, I could see how that was missing probably from my struggle. I think my struggle had a delicate balance it had to make, though, because it had to, for fans, it had to get everybody back on screen and get us all whooping and cheering at what was going on. But at the same time, you know, as much as we might not want to believe it, there are people that haven't watched The X-Files and are just going to be watching it because it's on Fox at 8 o'clock. When it premiered after the football, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It would have had one of the biggest audiences ever because it's just had the biggest game of the year on the telly right before it. So you need to be able to hook those people in as well. And I think it was a tough ask, and maybe for non-fans it maybe didn't quite fall right. I do think it balanced it well. I think because they'd done the same, because they'd done the two-night premiere, so they had that and then they had Founder's Mutation, I think what he's looking for, you get more in Founder's Mutation, even though it's still technically really a mythology episode as well.
That's true. Yeah, let us know what you think going forward, Clarence, and anybody else, obviously, about these episodes and about mythology and about how it blends together, because it's really interesting what Clarence has said, and it's interesting to see if anyone else agrees with that, really. So thank you for the feedback, guys, and you know, keep that coming in, definitely, as we go forward. We are done with Founder's Mutation, though, now, and Andrew will be joining me again for a look into what I think could end up being the episode that we all remember the most from this season, and that's Mulder and Scully Meet the Weirmonster, which is Darren Morgan's much, much anticipated return to the show. So, yeah, excited that you'll be back for that one.
I can't wait.
It's going to be fun. It will definitely be fun. He's the order of the day there.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Without a doubt. So, yeah, we will be back to look at that episode. So until then, remember, guys, trust no one.